WHYY is proudly supported by Penn Medicine. From groundbreaking discoveries to life-saving care, Penn Medicine's innovation is helping to change lives, one moment, one treatment, one patient at a time.
This is Fresh Air. I'm Terry Gross. On this Academy Awards Day, our subject is a new documentary that examines how homosexuals have been portrayed in movies over the century. How have they been portrayed? Well, the short answer is, for nearly 30 years, the Hollywood production code forbade the portrayal of gay characters and prohibited any mention of homosexuality on screen. And when the code was lifted, if a character was gay, you could bet that character was going to suffer.
Don't you see? I can't stand to have you touch me. I can't stand to have you look at me. Oh, it's all my fault. I ruined your life and I ruined my own. I swear I didn't know it. I didn't mean it. Oh, I feel so damn sick and dirty. I can't stand it anymore.
That's Shirley MacLaine in a scene from The Children's Hour, just one of the films under consideration in the new documentary, The Celluloid Closet. We'll meet the directors in a few minutes. The Celluloid Closet is adapted from the groundbreaking book of the same name, first published in 1981. The author, Vito Russo, died of AIDS in 1991. I spoke with Vito Russo in 1985, and he told me why he thought it was so devastating for lesbians and gays to see how they were portrayed in movies.
We go to the movies to see ourselves, to see a reflection of our lives. And in fact, motion pictures in this country have been a reflection of America, of the way we see our country and our people. And so when you go to the movies and you don't find yourself up there, it comes home to you in a double sense that you are an alien in your own culture.
Well, you say in your book that screenwriters and directors would talk to you, but you really couldn't find any actors who would talk about the subject.
That's right. Even heterosexual actors would talk about playing homosexual characters because they don't feel threatened. Gay actors, who very seldom play gay characters anyway, because just don't want to talk because it's too threatening to their own personal identity to have to get a little closer to the subject than they want to. They don't want to discuss it. You know, and I understand that. I also understand the reasons why gay actors are in the closet in Hollywood. I mean, it's very dangerous to come out of the closet in any profession, but even more so in Hollywood, because Hollywood creates an illusion, a fantasy that people have to live up to. I mean, a lot has changed in the last 20 years. You know, we've now been able to discuss a subject which 20 years ago you couldn't even talk about on radio or television. And yet it is still true that economically it's dangerous. Hollywood is a freelance town where every six or eight weeks or 2 or 3 months or whatever it is, an actor is looking for a new job. So it's not like if you're a banker, what do you change jobs once in your life, twice? An actor changes jobs every 6 months. And if 10%, 15% of the people who do the hiring in that town don't like gays, you're cutting yourself out of that much of the job market.
Now, there was a period in the movies of close to 30 years where you couldn't portray homosexuality at all. The code lasted from 34 to 61. What specifically did it say on that subject?
Essentially, it was only one line. It said, sexual perversion or any inference of it is strictly forbidden. And so this was only one rule which the Hays Code promoted, which included you could not show married people sleeping in a double bed. That's where we got single beds from. You could not show suicide. You could not show murder going unpunished. You could not use certain words. You could not show adultery, prostitution. I mean, it was a whole list of things you weren't allowed to do. And for that period of time, 30, 35 years, whatever it was, you couldn't even say the word homosexual on the screen or allow the public to know that such people existed because it was considered indelicate and against industry standards.
Well, you write in your book that since you really couldn't refer overtly to homosexuality, that what ended up instead was that the symbols of homosexuality were manipulated. What do you mean by that?
Well, by the symbols of homosexuality, essentially, I mean the roles that were assigned to men and women. Masculinity and femininity are subjective, and yet they were manipulated to indicate sexual deviation without actually saying so. So that, for instance, in 1949, you had this movie, Young Man with a Horn, which was the life story of a jazz musician, Bix Beiderbecke, and it was Kirk Douglas, Doris Day, and Lauren Bacall. Lauren Bacall clearly played a lesbian in this movie. But it was 1949 and you couldn't say so. And so all the sort of iconography the ways in which she was presented were very masculine. She was tough, sophisticated, independent, all the things that eventually Katharine Hepburn obviously was playing for years, but she always lost in the end and submitted to her husband or her boyfriend. But all those qualities which we are supposed to take as masculine qualities, courageousness and drive and ability, were given to women who were considered less than women, you know, and their femininity was taken away from them. In the same way, the opposite side of the coin was that you got all these sort of stereotypical sissies. To make you laugh. In Fred Astaire and Ginger Rogers movies, there was always the sort of effeminate butler or best friend. And it goes right through film history, right up to Victor Victoria with the incredible Robert Preston character. And these signs, you know, of less than masculine became symbols for homosexuality. You didn't have to make it sexual. You were just saying this is a gay character because of the way he or she behaves.
So do you think that actually lesbianism and homosexuality became more stereotyped because in order to indicate mm-hmm. that there was a gay or a lesbian, you had to make the woman into a man or the man yeah. into a woman, so to speak, in yeah. order to give that message in a really covert way?
Yeah, well, because there was no allowance for depth or concept or context. And so, I mean, for instance, if you ask producers today on television, why is it that every time you have a gay character, the character has to be flamboyant and effeminate or stereotypical? And they say, well, that's what's called easy identification for television. If we have a gay character and we don't make that character a stereotype, how is the audience going to know that that character is gay? Well, the answer is that you have to take a little bit more time. And you have to establish it in other ways. But we live in a very quick age where the audience has to be able to identify who they're looking at immediately. And in the absence of color or ethnicity, what they need is a quick stereotype to say, boom, gay character, and then go on to the next thing. So they don't have the luxury of establishing characters dramatically. You know, and making, you see, my idea is no more movies about homosexuality. My idea is that there should be movies. And in those movies, occasionally, some of the characters should be gay implicitly. And their homosexuality should have nothing to do with the story. They should just be there the way they are in life. Now, that's not done very often. I could think of one example in the David Bowie film, which was directed by Nicholas Roeg, The Man Who Fell to Earth. Incredible example, because Buck Henry in that film plays David Bowie's lawyer. And happens to be gay. He's incidentally gay. And it has nothing to do with the rest of the film. It's just established that he has a boyfriend. And at one point during the shooting of the film, Nicholas Roeg, the director, was asked by Buck Henry, why am I playing a gay character? Why is this character homosexual? And Roeg said, why not? There are homosexuals. And it was just sort of the easy solution to the problem. They exist in life. Why not put them in the movies? But don't make that the subject of every movie.
You have at the end of your book a list of ways that people who, that gay characters were either killed or committed suicide at the end of the movies. I mean,
true.
Have that many gay characters in the movies taken their own lives?
Yeah, the vast majority. It was the standard ending for a homosexual in the movies.
Did this start in around 1962?
Yeah, yeah. Actually, it started at the turn of the century. I mean, one of the very first films ever to deal with homosexuality came out of Germany in 1919, and the gay person committed suicide at the end of that movie. And it's been that way ever since. I think it's part of the fact that movie makers were considering the audience. You have to make a moral judgment on these people. And also, it takes from life. I mean, you can't just ignore the truth and say, well, the movies distorted everything. The movies did not distort everything. There is a truth in every stereotype. And for many, many years, homosexuals killed themselves because society would not tolerate them. A person would discover that they were gay, and they would commit suicide. And I'm not saying that this happened in the thousands. There are obviously millions of happy, healthy gay people, you know. But this was a staple of American movies, that homosexual life ends in tragedy, something that we know is not true now. But for years, the gay person killed themselves at the end of the movie. It happened in 26 out of 28 major films in 20 years, which dealt with homosexual characters.
Can you name three of them?
Oh, sure. The Children's Hour. At the end of The Children's Hour, Shirley MacLaine hangs herself. At the end of Advising Consent, Don Murray slits his throat. At the end of Justine, Cliff Gorman gets killed by having a hat pin stuck through his neck. At the end of The Fox with Sandy Dennis and Anne Haywood, a tree falls on Sandy Dennis and kills her. Constant. I mean, even today, there's a film called Kiss of the Spider Woman, and it's a wonderful film. And in fact, the stereotype is used to heighten the dramatic quality of the character, and I think it's a terrific characterization by William Hurt. But he, in effect, commits suicide at the edge of that film by allowing himself to be killed by terrorists and the police. He gets caught in the crossfire on purpose. He sort of gives up his life for an ideal. And it's sort of, in a way, it's depressing because people say, oh, God, as good as these movies are, do we constantly have to put up with homosexual who dies at the end of the movie? And you think to yourself, well, to some extent that's true, and to another extent, there is no movie without dramatic conflict. Nobody wants to make or see a movie about constantly happy people who have no conflict in their lives. Movies are made of conflict. So you have to balance it a little bit. All we're saying in terms of gays is there are as many different kinds of gay people in the world as there are different kinds of heterosexuals. And so what we want to show is the diversity of homosexuality and not simply use the same old tired stereotypes over and over again.
Vito Russo, author of The Celluloid Closet, recorded in 1985. This is Fresh Air.